are listening to a One Pint Stand, a Minnesota craft beer podcast that tells the stories of craft beer in Minnesota and beyond. So kick back, relax, and grab a cold one. The show starts now. Hello, my name is Dan Bobian, and I write, produce, and host a One Pint Stand. I'm ecstatic that you're listening. This episode of a One Pint Stand is brought to you by Lupulin Brewing, home of Minnesota's favorite hazy IPA, Hooey. Known for world-class IPAs, their craft shines across every style. The award-winning Dortmunder Lager, the coveted Barrel God Imperial Stouts, fruity balanced sours like Fairies Yes, and the upcoming Squizzle Triple Berry. They are also the creators of Minnesota's favorite THC seltzer, Smazy, proving that whether it's beer or beyond, Lupulin delivers with creativity, consistency, and a whole lot of flavor. On this episode, I head over to Bauhaus Brew Labs to chat with Ben Jordan, the owner of ABV Technology and new owner of Bauhaus. In many ways, Ben rescued Bauhaus Brew Labs from the scrap heap of breweries that have had to close due to a myriad of reasons. His innovative vision for what a tap room can be is definitely ambitious. He seeks to create a uniquely inclusive drinking experience, weaving together beer, seltzers, cocktails, NA beers, and THC beverages all under one roof. This is a fascinating beer conversation. If you're a pint hoister or keg stander supporter of the One Pint Stand Patreon, you get to hear some insider insights on the THC legislation that sounds a bit optimistic. Ben breaks down why we should feel pretty good about the prospects of THC not completely going the way of the Dodo Bird and BMG Music. So, let's head out to Bauhaus Brew Labs for my interview with Ben Jordan. Cheers. Welcome to another on-location episode of A One Pint Stand. I'm your host, Dan Bobian, and today I'm at Bauhaus Brew Labs. That's right, Bauhaus Brew Labs, like a phoenix rising from the ashes. And we're gonna talk about this kind of timeline because I think it's interesting. We're doing an alfresco podcast out here on the stage. I feel like I should have some sort of banjo and some fancy shoes on. We're talking with Ben Jordan from ABV Technology and new owner of Bauhaus. Ben, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Yeah. So before we get into the meat and potatoes of our interview, I'd like to ask you a few get to know you questions. I always like to do some fun little things at the beginning. First of all, can you say your name and your exact title here at Bauhaus and ABV?
Sure. I'm Ben Jordan, and I'm the CEO at ABV and Bauhaus.
Okay. What is your favorite local NA beer?
Well, I'm pretty biased in that we help a lot of different breweries around town to produce NA beer, and you know, some of them you might know that we're involved, and others you might not know that we're involved. We're here at Bauhaus, so you know, Na has always been a big favorite of mine. I will also say that, you know, I really enjoy some of the stuff coming out of Summit and Surly. I think they've been equally innovative there. You know, the Nihilus brands, as well as some of the new brands that have come out of Summit, have been real home runs for them, and I think, you know, are really priced well for people who are looking for non-alcoholic and are looking for something that they can have all day long.
Now, what's your favorite Bauhaus beer?
Yeah, my favorite Bauhaus beer is the kind of classic Wonder stuff that was made for years and years here. I think they built their brand around that beer, and I think people really got to know them. That was by far the best-selling SKU, and for good reason. You know, a crispy Pilsner that hits all the right notes. I think that's the foundation for Bauhaus, and there's a reason it was so good. German beer styles are, of course, you know, the foundation for this place, and for me as well, that's my go-to style wherever I am. A Pilsner is the first place I go.
All right, last get-to-know-you question. I always like, this is the controversial one. This will cause me to lose followers, but I don't care. Do you think that the Sweet Martha's cookies at the Minnesota State Fair are overrated?
You know, I bring a crew to the State Fair when I go, and the five or six adults that I bring with can take down a Big Martha's, Sweet Martha's cook, Big Martha, Sweet Martha's cookies.
Bucket. We could only wish they were bigger.
Yes, I'm not sure if I can take down one myself, but I don't think they're overrated. No.
Okay. All right. Yeah. A lot of it, some people are like, well, I don't get what the big deal is. And now you do have to eat them right away. If you let them cool down, then they move out of that, like, right. the epic range of you know, baked good. But
I think that's a pretty general statement about a lot of state fair foods, right? Once a year, the nostalgia kicks in. And I'm not going to say it's the best cookie I've ever had, but the place and time and price are right.
Right. That's why they're geniuses when they do those different things other times of the year and they open up the fair. They just print money 3-4 times a year. I wish I could do that.
Yeah.
So, CEO of ABV Technology and now Bauhaus, can you tell me about, if somebody's listening and they're like, what is ABV Technology? Are you manufacturing cloned robots that will eventually take over the city? Tell me about what ABV Technology does.
Yeah, sure. ABV Technology was founded in 2017. We invented some technology that allowed us to adjust the amount of alcohol in fermented beverages, whether that be beer or wine or spirits or kombucha or cider. This technology allows you to put in a beverage and, under very gentle conditions, separate out the flavors and aromas from that beverage and divert those in one direction while the alcoholic part of the beverage goes in the other direction. And the result of that is that you can use that non-alcoholic flavors, aromas, essences piece to make really great non-alcoholic versions of your craft beer, wine, cider. And then the alcoholic part of that beer, wine, or cider can be used to make new beverages, seltzers, spritzers, RTDs, and other things that a really clear neutral base is really useful for.
Yeah,
it's the foundation for a lot of our customers' beverages that they make with us. Here in the Twin Cities, we service, you know, a couple of the major breweries. I think we have 200 customers nationwide and have done something like 500 different non-alcoholic and seltzer recipes for people over the years. I would say you're hard-pressed to go to a brewery in the Twin Cities and not see either a non-alcoholic beer that we help them make, a seltzer that we help them make, or one of our ABV beverage-branded canned products.
Yeah, I should mention I'm drinking the lager iteration of Na right now.
That's right.
So I want to ask right off the bat, because this tastes good, and if you didn't tell me this, there was no alcohol in here, I mean, I'd figure it out after I drank 5, and I could still do long division, but this has a great flavor and texture. I've tried a lot of NA beers throughout the years, and the texture, to me, is almost the trickiest part.
Yeah.
How is it, what's the sorcery, what's the magic that allows for the body of this beer to remain intact?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of different ways to make things that are non-alcoholic, and I'll use beer as an example here because we're at Bauhaus and we're drinking beer. If you decide you want to make a non-alcoholic product, you could start off by just following a traditional non-alcoholic beer making recipe in which you go through a traditional brewing process, but then you use a modified or don't, in fact, even ferment the product. What will result is kind of a sweeter, maltier, maybe some would say wordier,
yep,
and that we're talking with people in the know here about beer. I think that's an okay word to use. I think that's what a lot of the traditional non-alcoholic beverages that we tasted were. And really, you know, those were, in a sense, the inspiration for why we started ABV. We wanted to do something better. And the way you do it better is that you let the product ferment fully so that you create all of those esters and terpene byproducts and all of those aromas and flavors that only come from the fermentation of sugar by yeast and conversion into alcohol and carbon dioxide. You know, that's how we talk a lot about brewing and fermenting, but there's all of these other byproducts during fermentation that bring the special flavors of a fermented beer to a beer. Without that, it's really hard to synthesize that in the lab. You know, it's hard to not ferment something and get to that complex, dry, fermented beverage flavor that you get. So, for example, you know, if you look at the sugar content of a Na versus the sugar content of a non-alcoholic beer that's never been fermented,
what you'll see is that the amount of sugar in a Na is much, much lower because it's been fully converted into alcohol and carbon dioxide and all of these other byproducts. And those other byproducts affect the way that your nose and mouth and olfactory system perceive that beer. And so when you get that mouthfeel and kind of organoleptic response to the beer you're drinking, that comes from all of those things that are modified during that fermentation process. The nose is really good and the mouth are really good at detecting those complicated things because, well, as humans and historically, we've been really good at drinking fermented beverages and understanding what comes with those. Because we work with fully fermented beverages as the input to our process, the output NA has all those complex flavors, reduced sugars, so they're drier. We work in both beer, wine, cider, and especially in the wine world, the dry, complex notes that come from fermentation are extremely important. For beer drinkers, I think, you started off by asking me if you can't really tell that there was alcohol in it. And we like that. And I started off saying that a lot, but I'll say that, I think that you would know. I think if we put the two next to each other, you would know. The key thing that you should experience is, you still like the one that doesn't have alcohol
right,
in it.
Yeah.
And that it's equally satisfying to you. It's worth noting that, the non-alcoholic beers that people drink aren't only being drank by people who don't drink at all.
Right,
in fact,
yeah.
quite the majority of people who are drinking non-alcoholic are actually consuming regular beer and wine with alcohol alongside of it or on different days of the week, depending on what they need. With our specialty process, we've been able to find a way to kind of balance the removal of the alcohol without damaging those delicate, complex aromas and flavors. It's an additional step, which means there's additional cost involved. But kind of like, Swiss water process decaffeination. You end up with a better product by doing this additional step that consumers are looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, that does. Off the top of your head, give me the ballpark number of Minnesota breweries that you've worked with.
Minnesota breweries, I would say about 120. There's 170.
So that's a very large percentage.
Yes,
Of the ones, and outside of the state of Minnesota, what would you put that at?
220 these days.
Okay.
Yeah, we have. Our business model is that we are a service provider to a lot of those breweries. They bring beer and wine and other things to us in our Minnesota facility, in St. Paul here on Energy Park Drive. And then we de-alkalize them and give them back both their non-alcoholic and or seltzer byproducts. When customers grow out of that service model where they're trucking things back and forth, we often place a machine in their facility that allows them to keep brewing, but they don't have to ship it to us. They can just hook it up to their Bright tank, run it through our machine that we maintain and operate, and they operate, excuse me.
Is there a... I'm assuming what you've figured out is proprietary, or are there other companies in the country and world doing this?
Yeah, there's a lot of different, the technology is generally referred to as de-alkalization.
Okay.
And there's a lot of different flavors to it, without going too deep into the science of it. I would say that there are two big flavors of alcohol adjustment or de-alkalization. De-alkalization is a mouthful.
Yeah.
And it's hard to know how to spell it.
Gesundheit.
Alcohol removed is often what's used in the wine industry.
Okay.
I've landed on alcohol adjustment because that's really the more realistic, diverse application.
Sure.
Sometimes you might be going from 15% to 12% in a wine. Sometimes you might be going from 7% to 0.0 in an IPA. Right. That adjustment technology is what we've developed.
Okay.
Is it proprietary? Yes, we've developed, own patents on it.
Okay.
We own the intellectual property. That's, hard fought engineering and research and development time that we've, been working on I've been working on since back in my college days when I was adjusting the alcohol in beer and then bringing it to parties.
Okay.
I enjoy beer and wine and cider and, being able to have less alcohol but still be able to drink a lot of liquid.
Yeah.
That's my style.
That resonates with me.
I like having a glass in my hand.
Because there's something about, and this is, we'll get into this later, but, you know, breweries are very important to me personally because of the social aspect. Like, a lot of my friends I've met through breweries. And while when I first got involved with craft beer was 20 years ago, now I'm, you know, in my, I call it the late mid 40s, 47 and a half, I don't drink like I used to. And so, but I still enjoy the sitting down with friends for an evening, hanging out, and I don't want that to end. But I also know that I can't do that with a 6% beer all night long. So the fact that this Na Lager exists in the world and that it is so predominant across the Twin Cities as far as access to it, I love that change of pace. I love being able to continue the social interaction while also being responsible and keeping in mind the physical part of alcohol and how that affects me that night, the next day. I'm just deathly afraid of being hungover because I've got too much shit to do. So I'm not 23 anymore. So I think that that's a big part of it. And the fascination that I have as I was doing some, you know, internet research is that when soon, this place will be open soon, you offer an NA version and maybe a like if the original beer that you're doing was at 7.6, you might offer a 3% version of that beer, which to me is great. I would love to see more sessionable beer styles available with flavor that delivers on satisfaction. For a while, there were a lot of session IPAs. A lot of those were very astringent because people couldn't figure out the right balance between taking out the alcohol and removing the sweetness, and then you're left with sometimes an astringently bitter beer that's like, okay, yeah, that's great. This is like 4%, but, you know, this was before.
Hard to drink three of those.
Right, exactly. So I'm excited about that. Na was one of your first beers that you worked with, and Bauhaus was one of the first breweries you worked with. Why do you think that that's become such a big part of what people want in the last 5 years or so?
Yeah, sure. You know, you mentioned Bauhaus being one of our first customers. They were, in fact, our first customer. They wrote me my first check. We helped to develop their Na Helles back in 2019. I remember talking with Matt about it in early days, and he came over and looked at the tech we had and the process we had, and they were really, their whole team was really helpful in kind of educating us on, okay, great, you've got this technology, we've got this recipe, how do we tune both of them to kind of get the optimum product? And over the course of 6 years, you know, we refined and refined and refined, and you taste that in the product today. You know, the head's okay instead of being non-existent like it is in a lot of NA beer. It's not too astringent, it's not too malty, the hop balance is right. A lot of what you have to fight against when you're making NA beer is the traditional recipes, and the way that we perceive those recipes has a lot to do with the alcohol content. When you put ethanol, alcohol, in your mouth, what happens is that the receptors in the back of your throat and in your nose are changed in the way that they perceive those things. They fire at a different threshold. And so much like the reason that beer or, excuse me, much like the reason that whiskey burns, that is a ethanol concentration dependent effect. There are more subtle effects like how you perceive bitterness, how you perceive sweetness. All of those levels change. Our product that does the alcohol adjustments called the Equalizer, because that was the key chemistry understanding that we had about how we perceive things differently in the absence of ethanol. By tuning that a little bit and understanding, okay, maybe we need to change the hop bill a little bit or the malt bill or boil a little bit longer.
Yeah.
And combine that with our technology, which is sort of low temperature, low pressure, delicate separation, you get this really high quality beverage out. You asked me
Well, I want to also mention, just kind of follow up on something you said, which is, you know, the place here at Bauhaus and in general tap rooms. These are one of the remaining places that people can come and hang out. And beer and beverages, you know, much like the watering hole in the jungle, that's the place where people come to be in a community environment. And for us, I think it's, you know, tap rooms are a place that people do that here in Minnesota. Tasting rooms or coffee shops or other places have become popular for that as well in other parts of the country. We wanted to make sure that that tasting space, this tap room space, isn't just something for people who like 7% IPAs.
Right.
We want to make sure that it's everybody in the community here, you know, not only adults, but even children who want to come and hang out with their families on a Saturday are welcome into the space and that there's something on the menu for them and not just something that's an afterthought. You know, you come in here and you're not going to see any Diet Coke within 1,000 feet of this place. You know, nothing wrong with Diet Coke. I have one occasionally, but that's not what we make here. And that's,
right.
We want to make sure that people come in and try something and say, oh, wow, that's something I've never had before. I've never tasted that experience. Whether that's a non-alcoholic beer or a big, strong cocktail that we make with our seltzer base during that alcohol adjustment process, we think that that diversification of beverage choices is what is going to lead to success in this tap room. You know, you were asking some questions earlier about, you know, why this tap room needs to be reopened. And when we worked with the Bauhaus team and looked at what was working right, one of the things that was working really well here is the tap room.
Yeah.
You came here on a Saturday right up till closing, and it's packed. All these outdoor picnic tables, everything inside. You know, there wasn't a weekend where that wasn't a place to come hang out. Of the things that were working, that was the biggest one. And so immediately we have focused on getting that back open. This Saturday when it reopens, everyone who comes here is going to be able to experience, you know, lots of the great German beer styles and recipes that Bauhaus has been known for. All those recipes and the people who brewed them and the people who served them, many of those people are still here helping us to brew and serve those things. Likewise, we're taking those specialized recipes and we're turning those into low and no alcoholic versions so that if you decide you want to get a Pilsner first and then you want to switch to a 3.5% Pilsner and then you want to switch to a non-alcoholic Pilsner and then go pick up your kid from daycare.
Yeah.
Because that's the right path for you. That's an okay thing to do here and something we offer. Likewise, if you want to come in here and get something that has no carbonation, has a small amount of volume and has a lot of kick in the small glass, our seltzer-based cocktails, the Paloma, the Mimosa, et cetera, they deliver on that cocktail-like experience without all of the, you know, big bubbles and 16 ounces that come with a craft beer.
Yeah.
We want those people coming here too and feeling like there's something for them to choose. We make, just like with the beer in that example, we make a full strength version of that, a low alcohol version, a mocktail version, so that whoever you are, you can come here and get something. That's why this is, that's why this will continue to be such an important space for people here in the community.
Yeah. So I want to talk about that. I want to talk about at what point did you think, you know what, maybe I should buy Bauhaus. I mean, I have to imagine ABV technology keeps you very busy. What was it about? What was it about? Because I always like, yeah, you know, hey, I mean, I'm a teacher. So back in the day, I was like, should I do a podcast? I mean, I'm already pulling my hair out. But, you know, there's something about a creative challenge that is appealing. What was that it? Or you're like, I hate a good night's sleep. I want to get really go nuts on that. At what point did it become an idea in your head? And when did you and Bauhaus start talking about, hey, maybe this doesn't have to go away?
Yeah, it's a long story. And I'll try to kind of pull out the highlights here. But since we started making their Na Helles, both of our teams have become close.
Okay.
Everybody here knew everybody at my company because their team and our team were back and forth every single month helping to make those different recipes. As the craft beer scene, and both in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, and nationally has evolved, Matt Schwant and the team have been in conversation with me about ways that we can help to diversify that offering. They saw the same things about needing to offer more diverse offerings.
Yep.
As the various challenges in Minneapolis, Metro Surge, the COVID pandemic, the George Floyd events that led up to his murder, that really shaped a lot about the culture of people who are coming out and coming to Bauhaus and coming to other breweries in the Twin Cities. That cut down on a lot of traffic and made it really difficult for Bauhaus to continue selling as much beer as they needed to in the tap room. So Matt and I had been talking about ways to resolve that by helping to diversify beverages. As those conversations went on, we started talking about, well, what does the business look like? And I got to know what their top line revenue looked like, what their cost of goods sold looked like, and understood a lot about how the business actually worked. So when, in May of 2026, when Matt came to me and said, hey, I think that we're in a little bit of trouble and we're looking for a way out, I was able to start having those conversations really quickly and understand that there was an opportunity.
Okay.
This wouldn't have happened if we weren't also close friends. Matt and I have been talking for a lot of years, and just, a friendship grew out of that. Likewise, the people here, right? I cared a lot about the people who work here and wanted to see this beautiful tap room and the products that they make survive. As I was looking at Bauhaus, there was a lot of things that were challenging. Again, I mentioned some of those more local Minnesota, Minneapolis issues that affected the tap room. I'll also mention that nationally, of course, we've seen complicated changes in the ways people drink.
Right.
That might be people drinking less in certain demographics, whether it be Gen Z or boomers aging out of drinking, people wanting to drink less sugar or less carbon dioxide, or people not wanting to drink at all. Right? We're talking right. about a generation of people who are in their 20s now who were the first generation to be told in their school education that alcohol causes colon and prostate cancer. And for those that are concerned with those kind of cancers, that's,
yeah.
If your healthcare teacher for 7 years of your high school tells you that alcohol causes cancer, you might think twice as you're making right. choices in your 20s. What a lot of people have landed on is wanting to come out, wanting to enjoy these places, really enjoying the beverages, but wanting to moderate a little bit the amount of alcohol, sugar, et cetera, that they're drinking. We thought that when we looked at what Bauhaus could do and we saw the capacity and the skills that the people had, that we could eliminate or fix the things that were broken pretty quickly and reopen up those lines of revenue, the tap room, certain products being sold to restaurants and bars and grocery stores like Tetra and Na, those things could be spun back up really quickly
yeah.
and diversified a little bit more with our technology. That was kind of
the Tetra
first.
Is your THC
That's right.
brand.
That's
right?
correct.
Okay. So.
So we looked at that and said, okay, so there's some things that are working. Let's reboot those quickly. And then we saw some things that weren't exactly working well and are still kind of figuring out, what does distribution beyond the Minneapolis-St. Paul area look right. like for this business going forward for the different products that they make. The other piece of it is that, ABV technology and ABV beverage, that's the retail front end of ABV
okay.
before
yep.
Bauhaus.
Yeah.
We make all of these different products for people that we adjust the alcohol in, but we're a full service provider there where a lot of our customers are coming to us and saying, hey, I want you to just brew the thing, de-alkalize it,
yeah.
can it, label it, pasteurize it, put it on a pallet, and ship it to wherever I need it. And those are things I had to outsource to other providers.
Sure.
Now, being who we are, we have this deep network of breweries around the state and around the country. So I worked with great partners like Indeed and Venn and Elm Creek and Insight and Surly. And you know, I'm sure I'm leaving out a bunch that brewed for us on a custom basis to give us prize, another one, give us what we needed. But just like every business, they need to make money. So there's a markup involved when they brew it.
Okay.
And then when we needed to pasteurize or can, we needed to bring Ironheart in. And again, great partner, awesome. If you're using Ironheart, you know, shout out to those folks. They are doing amazing work.
Yep.
We've used them for years to make our products, but they need to make money.
Yeah. And costs have gone up across the board. So every type of thing has gotten more expensive.
That's right. So when you, you know, when I went out to my customers and said, yeah, we can make a non-alcoholic beer for you. We can make the best one you've ever had. And they said, what's the cost per case? And I said, you know, well, it's going to be, you know, I'm just pulling a number out of thin air, but like $45 a case, right?
Yeah.
That's a high number.
Right.
And if you're trying to sell that to a liquor or grocery store, there's no margin left to compete with the Heinekens and Budweisers and Athletics of the world.
Right.
So what this acquisition did for me, you know, we got a 20,000 barrel a year brewery and a team of people that knew how to operate it like the back of their hand. We got a canning line and a pasteurizer that's at scale for that production capacity.
Okay.
So now I can take all those steps and reduce my costs and make our services for making non-alcoholic and seltzer base and all those other things available to the craft breweries and wineries of the world.
Yeah.
At competitive prices.
Okay.
So that, you know,
so that's the, yes,
that's
the angle,
the long
because
game.
When I saw it, I'm like, okay, why? Just because, you know, everything I read, everybody I talk to is just like, God, if I could get out of distribution right now, I would totally do that because it's just kind of like a dinosaur of a model for, you know, making money.
Yeah,
but
you know,
those
distributors are struggling
right?
Everybody in the industry is having a hard time.
Because it's just nobody's buying beverages that way anymore.
Less people are.
Less people are.
But if you go down to, like, you know, look at the places that have diversified and leaned in, South Lyndale Liquors, right? You know, props to those folks. If you go there, you can get not only a beautifully arranged selection of beverages from NA to the strongest thing you've ever had, but you can go into their restaurant and get a glass of wine and a great sandwich. And like, I think people are enjoying those experiences where it's not just about, you know, hazy IPAs anymore. Again, love and the hazy IPA, but it's not just about that anymore.
Right. And as I would talk to a lot of brewery owners and brewers, I'm like, you know, why don't you have more NA? Why don't you do your own NA? And it would always come down to, it's not that there wasn't a desire to do it.
Yeah.
Wasn't there? But like you said, the price point was so, like, if you're taking a beer that you've made, you're sending it out the door and sending it to ABV technology to have you work your sorcery on it, and you come back. And even if you get, you know, a seltzer base that they can use, it's still a very pricey thing. Now, what I think I understand you saying is that you have the capacity here to eliminate maybe some of those extra steps that eat away at the percentage of margin and profit there is. That's what I'm like, because I know that the capacity here is ginormous comparatively to other craft breweries and what they can do.
I mean, look at Athletic or Best Day or, you know, any of the larger non-alcoholic beer brands. That's the growth story in beer right now is low and no alcohol, you know, as well as some other SKUs that are more specialty beverages. We see that those craft breweries who came to us and said, hey, we'd like to make our own NA beer, the place that they would be able to make it and serve it to you, and you see this in the Twin Cities, is on tap.
Yeah.
Because it was so expensive when we did the work, or, you know, if they did it themselves, for example, they didn't have enough margin left to go into distribution. And so you never saw it on the liquor store shelf unless they did a huge volume with us where we could make the margins work. We have some great customers who did go all the way in. Bauhaus is one of them.
Yeah, right.
But now what I've been able to do is, you know, I'm one of the few people in the industry who made a move here to reduce prices to my customers. Instead of another price hike coming down the pike, what you're going to see from ABV is reduced prices, which we think is going to result in more volume, more craft non-alcoholic beverages coming from, you know, the folks around here and around the country that use our services.
Yeah.
Because now they'll have the extra margin that they need to be able to go into distribution and make more volume.
That's the big play. Okay. That's the angle.
And we grow by opening up more of these service centers.
Right? Yeah.
Bauhaus is a beloved community space with amazing recipes, and it's going to be, you know, it's going to feel like the same and more. But from the business side, it's also a place where we can show off a little bit. Mm-hmm. We can show you what you can do with beer. And that's the big story that I think we're trying to tell, is that, you know, people still want the place. They still want the products. They just want some slight tweaks to it that fit more with their style these days.
Well, so many things are changing. You know, the people's needs are changing for what they want to drink, what they want to consume. And I never thought, like, a 7% beer that I really like, if I could wave a magic wand at a brewery and be like, hey, could I make this 3% because I want to have one more?
Yeah.
That would be incredible.
Yes.
Do you feel that that's going to really get a lot of wheels turning about what beer can be? I know we were talking, you know, that's kind of the trick right now is trying to, there's so many negatives, rising costs of everything. It's like, well, maybe we need to stop looking at what's right there in front of us and get a little creative with what we think we can do. And I think that might be a really interesting road forward.
Well, it started as a one pint stand. I had 2 pints for a lonely hand. Bounce back like a rubber band. 4 3 pints. Drink a fourth in a faraway land. But I couldn't make it as a single man. So I married me this beer right here. A pint, a 1 pint stand.
Hey, thank you so much for listening. Hopefully you're enjoying a 1 pint stand. My aim is to help spread the word about craft beer. Enjoying craft beer is a passion of mine, and I love chatting about it with other people. A 1 pint stand has a goal of helping breweries tell their stories. I love to get out in and beyond Minnesota to visit breweries, beer bars, and meet other interesting beer people. If you're also into those things, you'll probably want to keep tabs on the show. So go ahead and follow a 1 pint stand on Instagram, Facebook, Blue Sky, and Mastodon. I also started a TikTok account because I was tired of Charles calling me a boomer for not having one. I would also appreciate any and all positive reviews on Spotify, Apple Music, or wherever you listen to your podcasts so that we can help make it easier for other craft beer listeners to find us. I recently started a YouTube channel where every podcast episode is available. I'm also going to be doing more video snippets when I'm out and about, so you can find that on YouTube. If you want to be a supporter of the podcast with some of the extra change you find in your couch cushions, I have a Patreon. There are 3 different monthly levels of support, and they're priced at $1, $3, or $5 a month. If you pledge at the $3 or $5 monthly level, you get some cool perks. So go to patreon.com and search a 1 pint stand to check it out. We're up to 31 supporters, and I'm just really excited about what that means for the show. If you like reading about craft beer, check out my written work on a 1pintstand.com. I love to write, and that is where you'll find a lot of written content covering both the local craft beer happenings as well as my craft beer travels. I truly appreciate you listening and taking time to enjoy our stories. Some beers just belong in a stein. And Lupulin Brewing's GABF gold medal winning Oktoberfest is officially back. Their traditional German-style Märzen is on tap now in the taproom, and you can grab 4 packs at the brewery or wherever Lupulin is distributed. It's malty, smooth, crisp, and basically made for fall. If you really want to celebrate Oktoberfest, mark your calendar for Saturday, September 19th, because Lupulin's biggest one-day celebration of the year is back.
They'll have their annual German beer releases, exclusive beer infusions, German-inspired food, and live music from the Elk River German Band and Hell's Half Acre. Plus, there's axe throwing, a stein-holding contest, a bounce house obstacle course, a pretzel necklace station, a best-dressed contest, custom Oktoberfest apparel from BCR Gear, a mobile sauna, and much more. As the day rolls on, the Stave will transform into a German-style beer hall, keeping the celebration going into the evening. So grab your stein, grab your friends, and head to Lupulin Brewing for Oktoberfest on Saturday, September 19th. Lupulin Brewing, award-winning, stein-worthy.
How about a beer?
Since you've made plans to open, do you have breweries that maybe were like, I don't know if we could do this. It's kind of not in our budget now that this is an option. Have you had local breweries come in? Hey, let's talk again. This might work.
Yeah, we've been lucky enough to get a lot of press around this reopening, and the result has been, you know, some free marketing in some sense. Our sales team is extremely busy right now fielding calls about, hey, now that you've got the Bauhaus facility, that means you've got capacity to be able to service my needs. We've been able to on the fly adjust prices, bring people in who are on the fence, and you know, our dance card's filling up pretty quickly for the month of September. We're pretty excited about some of those. I think I'll be careful to let those customers make their own marketing announcements. But
sure. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some really exciting ones. And I think often about this kind of hypothetical group of people who's planning a Saturday night, right? And they're, you know, let's say it's, four people. One of them doesn't drink alcohol. One of them loves craft beer. One of them doesn't like to have a lot of sugar and gluten. And, you know, one of them is looking for something that's not so filling. Maybe they like a strong cocktail. That's what that group's been in my mind as we've designed this.
Yeah.
The other thing that's been in my mind is I think a lot of the conversation about why people are drinking less has been about alcohol. And we've certainly been thinking about that ourselves. But the other piece that's real here is that it's about money.
Yeah.
Like, we're trying to give people options, whether they have $3 or $12.
Yeah.
Right. Do you want a small session beer? We've got you. Do you want a big imperial stout in a 16-ounce pint glass? Definitely, we've got you. That diversity of offerings, not only on ABV, but also on price, I think helps to bring that hypothetical group of people in who are, again, the story's been so much about, oh, Gen Z's not drinking and boomers aren't drinking anymore. And that's true somewhat about ABV, but the conversation is also about money these days. You know, interest rates are up. People's pay has not adjusted to that. Inflation continues to grow, and people are looking for a place that they can go and hang out but not have to spend $10 a pint.
Yeah.
Some beer's worth $10 a pint. Don't get me wrong.
Right. So I was talking to a brewer over the weekend. I've just kind of like casually been chatting. I'm like, why can't every brewery offer a $5 beer? Because when I'm going around town, and I'm a public educator. When people, we joke, like, you know, when we do our contracts, we get like, oh, we're getting 2.5%. That's not a raise. That's a kick in the pants. That doesn't do anything. I have to be more selective with how often I go out and where I go. There are places in the Twin Cities, their pricing model prices me out. I know what beer is. I know what ingredients cost. I do not understand in this economic time when everything is so much more expensive, why aren't breweries helping us out a little bit? There's a brewery, very popular brewery in Minnesota, that they have a value meal now. They have several beers that are $4, $3, It's just a handful. We're not talking their, you know, Czech Pilsner made with all European malts, because that would be awful.
Shipping's expensive. Yeah. Tariffs are expensive.
We're not talking about imperial stouts. We're talking about beers that are easy to make. The ingredients are not super costly, and it's getting people in the door. I think that would solve a lot of problems for a lot of people, because you talk about getting people in. Volume. There's a psychology around spending money. If I know that I can go to a place, I'm like, oh, I got this first beer for $5. I got my second beer for $5. Well, I've already saved. I'm going to get whatever I want for my third beer and treat myself. As a business, you're still making money because I'm there. But if I'm like, I don't have $30 to spend on two or three beers, I'm not coming in at all. So talk to me specifically as you can about what that pricing might look like. So you said, let's just take, so if you've got a 7% beer that you would typically sell for $8 a pint, if there's a alcohol reduced version and an NA version of that beer, what would...
They're all going to be the same price.
Okay.
We decided that instead of making it about the alcohol, we're just going to keep the prices low on everything.
Oh, okay.
You're fighting against a perception where, okay, yes, the alcohol is lower in an NA, but it costs more to make the NA. Mm-hmm. And so rather than punish the people who want the NA, we just across the board, you pick.
Yeah.
We're going to charge you the same amount for that thing. Same with the mocktails. Put in different sizes, right? If you want a 10 ounce instead of a 16 ounce of something, you know, I love to have a big hazy IPA, but I would love to have 10 ounces of it instead of 16.
Yeah.
And then maybe switch back to, you know, a session ale or something like that. Depends on the night, what I'm doing. Talking about costs, right? Like, again, the whole industry is going through some really big challenges, regardless of what tier you are talking about. The retailers are having their own challenges. The distributors and wholesalers are having many challenges. Look at RNDC a couple of weeks ago, right? They've filed for bankruptcy and left a lot of folks in the lurch who are making beverages. There's a lot of pressures around accounts payable that people are dealing with. And then, you know, the pain is when then the Ball Corporation tells you that cans are going up by 10% again.
Yep.
And your CO2 supplier says it's going up by another 10%. And the people who are doing your canning and the malt provider, and they're all just reacting to the increased costs that they have in their supply chain. I don't blame any of them. But in aggregate, you have to zoom out a second and say, okay, we can't just keep doing this. There are some people who will come in and spend $30.
Yeah.
But we're not going to get the kind of numbers we want at Bauhaus.
Right.
Because the market's saturated with $9 IPAs, $10 IPAs. Right. Again, those customers are my customers. Those are, you know, Black Stack and Barrel Theory and all those folks are making some of the best beer in town, and I'm not trying to disparage them.
Right.
But for the people who aren't looking for that, we want to make sure that there are price options and size options and ABV options and sugar options that meet their needs. That's how this place is going to get filled up.
Yeah.
Is with that diversity of options. In terms of other kind of cost factors, I think, you know, you're coming back to beer styles there and some beer styles being more or less expensive. We're trying here to kind of hit the big notes right out of the gate, the big year-round, you know, perennially available, the Pilsner, the Hazy IPA, this Guava Sour that we make. We have a Dry Irish Stout on right now, and we really think that those are just such, you know, big winners for people. The fact that we've been able to then take those and make non-alcoholic versions that are at the same price, that's part of the equation.
Yep.
But the magic we have is that then the alcohol part of that beer, which is still a beer, the part without the flavors and aromas, that part can then get turned into a seltzer or a RTD or whatever you want,
yeah,
a cocktail.
that additional output makes it possible to reduce the price across the board for both.
Okay.
We have a machine that takes in a fermented beverage and outputs two beverages. And so you put in a barrel, you get out two barrels.
Yeah.
That's where the money comes from, and that's how we can be both economical and provide all this diversity of beverages.
Okay.
That's the magic.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Not magic, right? It's engineering and science, and I guess it's not distinguishable from magic, which is the key, evidently, to startups. But
yeah.
At Bauhaus, we've got a really great example here on the tap when we reopen. We have a non-alcoholic Pilsner. You're drinking it right now.
Yep.
That we then infused with hemp in order to make a THC non-alcoholic Pilsner.
Okay.
On tap. When's the last time you had a tap THC beer?
Yeah.
Probably never.
Never.
Right? It's going to be in a big frosty glass. It's going to have a nice head on it, and you're going to get what you want. That beverage is the epitome of what we're trying to do, right?
Yeah.
Fermented, beautiful Pilsner, de-alkalized NA, THC, all in one place.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's nice to... I was telling... is it Carrie or Kari?
Here,
yeah,
we have two Carries here. I think the Carrie that was upstairs,
the graphic designer,
yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Carrie, I was telling Carrie that it hasn't been much good news lately. So when I saw this pop up, I was like, hey, all right, finally something to celebrate. That's really, really exciting.
We think so. And again, there's a lot more people than just me involved here. I've had my team and the Bauhaus team have worked hand in hand during this very rapid transition. You know, you asked me if I just don't like sleep. I'll also add that on May 31st, my second son was born.
Oh, wow.
And so when I went to my wife and said, honey, I know I'm about to go on paternity leave, but maybe we should buy a brewery at the same time. Luckily, she's, both a great mom and a lawyer and was able to get behind it because it was,
because
it made sense. We spent a lot of time looking at the business and the people who come here and the people that work here and said, there's a move here that makes sense for ABV and its team that also makes sense for Bauhaus and its team.
Yeah.
I think that we were able to put together that kind of integrated total solution. That's why this is going to work.
Yeah.
I think there was a lot of people who wanted to buy a tank or buy a brand or, hire some of the people.
I know. Here. One of my friends was like, hey, they just gave me a tap handle on the last day. I'm like, oh, that's kind of crazy. So I'm like, well, they might need that back now, buddy. I'm not gonna out the person, but afterwards we'll talk. If you're a tap handle short, I'll make a few calls. Like, I'll have it to you by the end of the workday.
No, they get to keep those. Those are legit. In fact, you're gonna see a lot of rebranded offerings here.
That's a great segue into one of the last things I wanted to know is, sure, like, what can people, I know we talked about the types of beverages and offerings that you're going to have, but like, really give me some specifics about why people should be excited about what's going to be different, what's going to be new, what's going to be exciting.
Yeah, sure. I think that this place is just aesthetically, architecturally, one of the most beautiful tap rooms in the Twin Cities. And when I had the opportunity to make this happen, that was one of the major deciding factors. I think people just want to be here regardless of what they're doing. We did a lot of work to kind of put a fresh look on it. You'll see a lot of the same features here, but we've been spending the last 45 days repainting and polishing and cleaning and rerunning tap lines and brewing more beer and, trying to put together an updated package that represents that. A lot of the same old beautiful things that we're working here with that diverse beverage offering.
Yep.
If you walk in the door and come buy something on Saturday, the doors open at noon. What you're going to see is an updated menu that has lots of great beers on it. And you can choose to have, the Pilsner recipe, the Hazy IPA. These are the beers that were Wonder Stuff and Lounge Wizard, but we've rebranded them as part of the change. Likewise, you're going to be able to get low and no alcohol versions of those, not just by somehow like adding in or removing alcohol. That was one internet rumor that I'll dispel, is that we're somehow just taking NA and then like pouring alcohol into it.
By the way, like what even more expensive than just yes. making NA is yes. to add the alcohol back. Yeah. It's like the most wasteful machine I could design. We actually did that experiment early on where we would like make an NA version of something, then just add the alcohol back in and be like, can you tell the difference?
That's crazy.
It's a funny idea. Huh. But that's not what we're doing. We're making a traditional Pilsner recipe, the old Wonder Stuff recipe that we've updated and rebranded, and you can come in and get that, right? Like that's the big winner. Same with the Hazy, same with the a lot of the perennial recipes that Bauhaus has had here. But you can also get a low and no alcohol version of those recipes that have been run through our specialty process. All that's on tap.
Okay.
And the next thing you'll see on the menu is you'll see all of these seltzer-based cocktails. We make, a 15, 10, 5, and 0% version of those cocktails, ABVs.
Okay.
There's a Paloma, there's a Mimosa, there's a Sangria that's based on non-alcoholic wine mixed with the beer alcohol portion to make a sangria.
Okay.
That's how we, a lot of people have, again, internet questions here that I think a lot of people are asking, but like, how are they doing it? Are they,
well, I was going to say, cause you can't you could only do that if you were a brew pub with the wine.
Yeah.
But that's
so we at ABV, we're licensed as a winery.
Okay.
We're also an OCM licensed low dose hemp THC manufacturing facility and retailer. So we have all these different licenses in our production facility. And then in the tap room, we only can serve beer.
Right. Yeah.
But, and THC beverages as well. That was a carve out that the state of Minnesota made sure we got in place. But because we can produce non-alcoholic wine, we can use that as an ingredient in the sangria along with the alcoholic part of the beer that was separated in our process. A lot of people ask, is that distillation? We don't do distillation here. That's a license that we've been looking at pursuing in the future, but we never increase the concentration of alcohol. If we have something on the menu that says it's 20%, it's because we brewed a 20% beer.
Yep.
We don't ever do distillation here. And that's, another key question people had is how it's possible. Because we stayed a brewery with a tap room, it means that not only can we sell all those diverse beverages here that are beer-based in the tap room, but we can also sell to liquor stores and grocery stores and restaurants. We've decided to focus on the Twin Cities and kind of pull back a little bit there and focus on just what we can distribute ourselves while we kind of get our feet under us and figure out what's the right play. We have all this capacity, but a lot of that's going to be used for our contract customers. I think that the distribution and retail sales model is just like the beer and wine world is changing on the brewing side. It's changing on that side as well, really rapidly. I'm interested in seeing how we grow into distribution in the future, if that's the right way for us to grow.
Yeah.
I think our liquor store, grocery store, restaurant customers, they are really excited to see what we're going to come out with. And, we're already getting orders for non-Tetra, and I hope that, our other beverage offerings, both on the seltzer-based cocktail side as well as the full-strength beers side, are equally attractive.
Yeah.
By the way, like, if beer, non-alcoholic beer, cocktails or mocktails aren't your choice, there's sparkling water. There is a nitro cold press. There is a kombucha from Jay's Kombucha down the road. We're really excited to be featuring, some of those local providers to round out that offering for people who might not want beer at all.
Yeah, I think that's smart.
I know that I love to have a coffee, a beer, a cocktail, maybe a THC drink, and then go to bed.
And sometimes mix up the order because that can be a real real fun time.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you say to the Bauhaus diehard who, as Midwesterners, we struggle with change.
Yeah.
And
I do.
When something changes or when something changes hands, there's always some trepidation. I know that I was a little worried when Dangerous Man changed hands.
Yeah.
I was like, what are they going to change? I hope they don't ruin the recipe for my chocolate peanut butter porter.
But Jeremy's done such a great job with that.
Jeremy has just exceeded my expectations as far as, and he truly, like you really understand what the ethos of that brand is. And anybody worth their salt knows you don't mess with that. You just try to continue the things that were going well and maybe tweak some of the things, add in a few new wrinkles, but you can't mess with success. Like, if it isn't broke, don't fix it. What do you say to somebody who's skeptical?
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, it's, I won't, there are a lot of things that needed tweaking at Bauhaus. There's a reason that it wasn't working.
Yeah.
And I feel lucky to have the opportunity to be the person who got to come in and reimagine those components. I think that for me, you know, this was one of my favorite places to hang out. The people that I know here, the beers that I liked, they sponsored my softball team, for God's sakes, right?
Like, oh, there you go.
We're built into this community. We know every brewery around, and we know the responsibility that we have here. People have high expectations for what we're about to do. You ask what people could do here, what should they think? If you're a skeptic, I would say, give me a chance. Give us a chance. Come in and see what we've done. Yeah. And if you don't like it, you know, I'll buy your first beer if you really want your money back. But my guess is that a lot of people are going to come in and see that, hey, this feels maybe even better.
Yeah.
It's gotten a fresh coat.
And that's possible too. And,
you know,
sometimes people don't think about, they get so focused on like, oh, it's not going to be the same. And they view it, it could be better. I mean, it's like, there is that possibility.
We've talked a lot about the diversity of beverages here. And like, you know, in every story that I've done on this, right, I've made sure to drive home the point, and I'll drive home it home again, right? Like, there are core beers that we make here that are the foundation. Recipes that have been in play for 11 years here that won't go away and that are going to become an integral part of that fabric that makes the rest of that menu, right? I just got done talking about how the NA works and how the seltzer-based cocktails work and things like that. It all comes from those beers.
Yep.
You know, the Pilsners and the Lagers and the Hazy IPAs and the Stouts that we've made, they're all the basis for everything. So first and foremost, people should come back and just come back and try what you love. I mean, yeah, we got that. But we've also made sure that in addition to the beverage choices that, you know, we are bringing in fresh, updated food options for people who are looking to come here and have two pints and a hot dog. Today we've got a great hot dog vendor called Nordic Dogs coming in.
Oh yeah.
And we're working with other local providers, some really exciting things coming down the pipe, some old favorites coming back, as well as some new names. We've tried to refresh and upgrade that food experience and make it a little more integrated. Likewise, we've leaned back into the events, right? You're going to see all those events that you love to come, you know, Draw League or the amazing, you know, events of Liquid Zoo and the Oktoberfest events. All those things are going to be back on the menu. If you come in here on Saturday, you're going to be able to get something that you love. I promise. You'll be able to eat something that you love, and you'll be able to listen to a DJ during the day and live music at night. The experience is going to be, let's call it Bauhaus 2.0.
Yeah.
It's an upgrade.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. Thank you so much for your time. This has been a great conversation. And this has been another on-location episode of A One Pint Stand here at Bauhaus 2.0.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Thanks so much.
I want to thank Ben for taking time out of his crazy schedule to sit down and record with me. The day we recorded, he had like four things going on. He had a soft opening happening at 4 p.m. And we were just, and there were a bunch of people setting up in the tap room for that. You might have heard the soothing sounds of metal chairs scraping concrete in the background. Well, that's why that was happening. Since Bauhaus opened up on August 15th, I've only heard great things about the variety of drinks available and the variations of ABV or non-alcoholic options. Ben is definitely a creative individual, and I hope that Bauhaus Brew Labs can recapture the imaginations of fans the way they did when they first opened. I know that Bauhaus is such an important place for so many. Now, I want to give a special thank you to Brad Ashton, Jason Berg, Marcus Dodson, Peter Dayton, Chuck Dorsey, Vicky Epper, Daniel Fisher, Todd Fitzloff, Dave Giefer, Matt Holton, Robin Irwin, Chioki Jones, Brian Ketchell, Sarah Cry, Dave Long, Ben Michaels, Brent Newman, Bree Smith, Jesse Storms, Cal Vandyhoof, and Brian Wu for being Kegstander level supporters of the One Pint Stand Patreon. You've all shown incredible generosity, and I'm grateful for it. Cheers to you all. If you happen to be a Pint Hoister or Kegstander supporter of the Patreon, you heard about some of the things happening that point to a potential positive outcome for the THC saga. I also want to thank the band Quirky for creating a nice little jingle for the podcast. I just love how it turned out, and it adds such a great unique touch to the show. So thank you so much. Again, I want to give big thanks to our sponsor, Lupulin Brewing Company, where top-tier ingredients meet expert craft to create seriously good beer. Find them at your favorite craft beer spots or swing by their tap room in Big Lake. You can find them online at lupulinbrewing.com and follow Lupulin Brewing on social for all the latest pours and happening. With that, this has been another episode of A One Pint Stand, a Minnesota craft beer podcast where the pants stay on, but the caps come off. Cheers. People doing the California sober. There's a lot of terms for it. I think they should have called it Jazz Cabbage Sober myself, but that's just, you know, I'm a wishful. I'm a dreamer.